Hi, I'm Sharad, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important ideas and conversations in culture, the arts, and today we're going to be looking at the planet. What could be more important than the health of the planet and the life that it sustains? And today I have as my guest Wong Su Lin. She is the co-founder and editor of Makaranga, an environmental journalism portal. Also with her on a mentorship program with Makaranga is Natasha Zuleika, a PhD student studying elephants, one of my favorite animals. So we're going to talk about elephants a little later on, but before we get to that, Su Lin, Makaranga is not a name that I think a lot of people will immediately even know how to spell. So let's look at that word first. What is Makaranga and why Makaranga?
We were looking for a name that would be appropriate for our new environmental journalism portal. And we actually wanted to go with weeds, something really unconventional instead of something really pretty, but something that would be meaningful. So Makaranga is actually a tree, and it's everywhere. It's all over Malaysia, but it's also found regionally as well. It's kind of what they call a pioneer species. So when, say, for example, there's a fire and it takes down a forest or some trees, a patch of forest, you need pioneer species, which are very hardy, that can basically fix the soil and make the area that has been burned down or that has been cleared good for other trees and other plants to exist, and therefore the animals come and the insects and all the rest of it. So we thought it was a very good metaphor for our name. It also sounds like Macarena, which everybody knows.
As a dance.
So, as a dance, but that's fine, you know, word association, and we hope that from there they will sort of start associating that with environmental journalism.
Okay, we're going to flash the website title so everybody knows how it's spelled.
Thank you.
But we're sitting, in fact, among kind of in a forest of books, and we know paper comes from trees and tree pulp, but I think when it's used for this, it's completely worthwhile, right? And it's a question of balance, I guess. Natasha, how did you get to know about Makaranga, and why did you decide you wanted to get onto the mentorship program that labels you a sprout, which is a very interesting thing because all I can think of is bean sprouts. I don't know why tauge comes to mind. So tell us, why Makaranga for you?
Yeah, so during my university, I've always been reading articles from Monga Bay. So when something like Makaranga popped up, I was like, wow, this is Malaysian. And this focuses on environmental journalism, which is what I was definitely interested in. So then when I saw the opening, I was like, yes, this is my chance to get involved. And I'm the type of person who likes my fingers in all kinds of pie. So I saw the quality of stories that Makaranga was bringing out, and I said, I want to be part of that. So, right. Which is why.
Yeah, it's very interesting because, in fact, there's quite a lot of writing on the environment. And in this bookstore in Gerak Budaya in Petaling Jaya, you get a good range of books on the environment, right? And they are, and you know, from David Suzuki onwards, David Attenborough, all these science communicators and communicating not just what's out there in the world, but the current planetary crisis, I think requires training and dedication. And I wanted to ask you, Su Lin, about that, the sustaining of this, because mainstream media does cover the environment, but does it do it well enough in a sustained way? What are the questions they're missing out on? You used to be in the mainstream media yourself, Su Lin. We can talk about the deficits in the media when it comes to environmental journalism. Maybe we can understand where Makaranga fits in.
Well, there are good environmental writers in mainstream media today, yeah? So I just want to put that out. But I think the issue is just media as a whole in Malaysia and elsewhere is suffering from lack of resources, lack of money, lack of talent, and therefore, you know, you end up having to make decisions as, say, a publisher of a media company. You end up having to make decisions about what you think readers want. And unfortunately, just the way Malaysia is in terms of our developmental priorities, the environment appears to be something touchy-feely or not so important, even as Malaysia is actually suffering from bigger and bigger problems that are related to environmental disasters, the climate crisis, sustainability issues, you know, pollution, all the rest of it. So, you know, we felt that, okay, This would be an opportunity for us. So my partner, I have to give a shout out to him, of course. His name is Yao Hua. He's a science writer, a very good journalist as well.
And with academic training, he's got a PhD.
He does. He's actually an entomologist. So, he's been a full-time writer for a long time, journalist for a long time. So both of us thought, okay, let's give it a shot. Let's be a specialist media, drawing on our more than 30 years of experience collectively, with our networks, our experience covering issues all these years, and let's do something that is for Malaysia and covering Malaysian issues, which we feel that there's a gap for.
Right, okay, so, you know, Natasha, I grew up, well, I mentioned David Suzuki, and because everybody knows David Attenborough. Also, I think of Jacques Cousteau, who, for someone like myself, a young boy, it was opening up the oceans as part of the world. I mean, you suddenly see what's below the surface, right? It's very exciting. For you, where and how did the media play a role in developing your passions, your work in elephant conservation, is that correct? And so on. Where did you get that?
I would say most of them are documentaries. Yeah, so documentaries from BBC, YouTube videos, and there is a small portion of it that is funny animal videos, I have to say, because...
Like cute ferrets or something.
Yeah, like gibbons pulling tiger's tail, things like that. And that really made me wonder, like, what else is there out there that I haven't seen? And thanks to the media, just from the comfort of my home, I get to see and experience that. And that makes me want to explore it even more.
Who for you, if I can just ask you to kind of follow up on that, are the kind of great science communicators, people who speak about the environment in a way that is easy to understand, is not technical, that sort of mobilizes your passions, who would you name?
I remember this book by David Quammen. He wrote The Song of the Dodo. Although it was a very thick book, but the language that he used was very easy. And there's also another book, I can't quite remember, but it's about animal behavior. Its name has a Carl in it. But yeah, again, his language was very easy to follow. Even though it's very technical on animal behavior, I really enjoyed reading his stories in them.
All right. For you, Sulin, who do you model yourself on when you think about, or do you, when you think about the work that you do with Makaranga and environmental journalism?
Well, I think I just have to say this first. It's very interesting that all the names that are being mentioned now are not Malaysian. They're not even Asian. They're not even like American Asian or British Asian, you know?
David Suzuki.
David Suzuki, I beg your pardon. Yeah. Yes, I'll give you that, yeah. You know, so I think the sort of writers that I do model myself after are actually also non-Malaysian. Although I've worked with very, very good editors who've helped to mold me, and they are actually not in the environmental arena. So I started off in covering IT, actually, in Singapore, and that was a new thing that was coming out. But I think editors have played a very, very big role. So if I may give a shout out to my editors, it's been Eileen Lian in Singapore, Toh Ching Eng in Singapore. Here in Malaysia, it's been people like Jun Wong at the start, which, you know, where I was working before. So I've had like really good editors, and they've played a big role. And then I've caught as a freelance, so I left the newspaper and then became a freelance writer, and I've worked with many different editors all over the place. So, you know, Francis Dorai in Singapore for my travel writing, you know, and any number of editors. So I think editors have played a very, very big role in formulating and shaping the way I write. And I think it's a doing of it, which is the experience that we're trying to give to young writers like Natasha, and we're so grateful that they are actually interested in coming in to, you know, to work with us. So I think
I mean,
editors play a big role.
Extraordinary qualified. Mm-hmm. I mean, yourself, you know, Yao Hua, somebody with a PhD in science. And in yourself, do you think it's necessary? Do your mentors need to come from that background? Do they need to have a basis in the science? In flora and fauna before they start, embarking on this passion of learning how to write about the environment, Sulin?
Oh, sorry, that question was to me.
Well,
I don't have a science background. So my background's actually in English literature and economics, right? I don't know if you know that. But anyway, and I didn't even do a degree in journalism, right? So, but I got interested in it, and it's writing. It might be different types of writing, and it's so nice that we're in a lovely bookshop now, independent bookshop, which we must all support. Local, you know, Malaysian grown and all the rest of it. So I think it's writing. If you're interested in writing, if you're interested in storytelling, you can write about anything and everything. But obviously, if you're passionate about something, and I think that's what it became. It became, the love of nature, being able to communicate that, being able to write about that, looking at issues that I think are really, really huge. Yes, we've got big problems post-pandemic now in terms of the economy, for sure. I'm not going to deny that. But at the same time, we've also got floods happening, landslides happening, you know, and people losing jobs in ecotourism, which is intimately connected to the environment. So you kind of have to look at everything and balance everything, you know, I feel.
Right. And Natasha, very quickly, do you find yourself struggling because you have that technical knowledge, you have all the nuances? When you think of the audience you're writing for, who is it that's reading your work? Is it another PhD student, or is it like me that has some interest technical knowledge?
When I write, I try to keep in mind that whatever it is, whatever message that I'm trying to convey, people like my mom, my sister, and people who are not interested in the environment at all should be able to see like, oh yeah, that's a good point. So that's what I keep in mind when I write, which makes it such a pleasant experience when I'm writing with Celine, actually, because she just makes it very easy for me to just convey this story I'm trying to tell.
Wonderful. Okay, so you're writing for aunties, but you're also writing for uncles like myself. Okay, we'll take a short break and we'll be back on Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, my guest Wong Sulin and Natasha Zulaika. They're both with Makaranga. It's a two-year-old environment portal promoting environmental journalism and also supporting the deep research that needs to happen in order to produce work of quality. And I want to ask you about that, Sulin. I know that Makaranga is engaged in a kind of fundraising effort at the moment. You're already a recipient of many grants, the Pulitzer Center grant, I believe, for the Pulitzer Center Rainforest Investigation Network grant, and so on and so forth. Can you tell us more about the grants you received? So grants have been the way to sustain yourself over the last 2 years. You want to, as I understand, balance that model of funding out. And tell us how expensive, and people don't like to hear this, how expensive good journalism is, especially about the environment.
Oh, how do I answer that? It's interesting, Natasha's doing a story exactly on the value of an ecosystem, it's a story of limestone. So how do you put a monetary value to it? And I think that's also another issue that people expect, that if you're doing stuff for the environment, it's like doing stuff for charity. They don't look at the work that goes into it. So I guess the only way I can sort of answer that is if I were writing for a publication, how much would they pay me to work on a story? In addition to that would be the time that both Yao Hua and I put into building the portal, into strategizing, into doing the editing, into working and mentoring. And we decided we just wanted to grow the pool. It can't just be Yao Hua and me doing everything. So we want to grow the pool. So that's the time that we have invested consciously to grow the pool as well and to try and raise the standards of environmental journalism in this country. So I don't know, how do I put a number to it? But I think on average, and because we are a startup as well, so there's a lot of stuff that we need to do. We do everything, including the layout. We lay out the stories ourselves. We did an appeal video, so please go to our website and look at it. We scripted it ourselves, filmed it ourselves, edited it ourselves. Okay, so everything is really, we are drawing on every single skill that we have. So how do you put a value to that? But for example, it would cost maybe $500,000 ringgit
a year
to actually run everything the way we would like to run it. We want to pay our writers. They are actually, I mean, Malaysians have been so generous. And they've actually, we did a small fundraiser just as a trial thing to see if people would support new journalists. And, you know, very, very quickly, we met our target, you know. So they are actually getting paid as well because we believe that they should be paid. At the same time, you know, people have been so generous, they've given us content pro bono, photos at discounted rates and all the rest of it, for which we're very grateful. So that probably won't change because it's very, very hard to make money in media. Every company will say that. Maybe not Astro, but anyway.
Well, we won't go into Astro's business.
Astro. Okay.
Okay, I want to ask you though,
sure.
Why not the grand model? I mean, you're already very lucky because you just started, right? I mean, you have a good collection of articles now and so on and so forth, but you at the very onset, you already seem to be a recipient of grants and from very important institutions. Isn't that a sufficient model to keep this effort going?
No, because grants cover specific stories. So for example, I was lucky to receive several grants from the Earth Journalism Network, but it was to cover like a story on fish,
on seahorses,
for example, or three stories last year, which I did, which was the impact of COVID on three environmental sectors, zoos, and so on and so forth. So they only give you that amount, but there's so many other stories to cover. And as I said, the work that goes into strategizing, into planning, into, you know, paying accountants, you know, into doing promotions, social media. We do all the social media ourselves. We don't have somebody else doing it for us, right? And the mentoring that we do, we pay them. We don't ask for money for ourselves. It's our time and effort that we put into mentoring them. And sometimes the story can take, you know, like up to 6 months to mentor a young writer because they've all got full-time studies, full-time work, all the rest of it. And we appreciate that they are putting the effort in. So we put the effort in as well, you know. But again, then how do you cost that? You know,
yeah.
So that's why grants, they're not enough. We are very grateful.
Very translucent because on the website, you actually do the breakdown, you know, of the fees that you pay yourself and others and the cost. So I think for anybody who's interested to give money to this effort, everything is there, at least it's kind of like an open audit of your work. Okay, I do want to ask Natasha this question. When you think about your own, you know, you're developing the skill now as a communicator, do you think that the future is you being an academic, working in the research, but also having that life? I mean, producing those books, producing documentaries that, you know, because a lot of times our university staffed by people who are not necessarily interested in communicating to the broader public. And I think that maybe is a serious deficit. How do you see yourself taking these skills that you're developing?
Well, in relation to my research, it's a bit on the human psychology and coexisting with wildlife, which is something that's going to be very, very relevant in the near future. So I don't see myself stopping at just finishing my PhD or publishing a few scientific articles. I'm going to go beyond that, and which is why I signed up to be mentored by Makaranga. So how do I tell this story? Because I do see myself making documentaries, writing books, you know, and I feel like that's a very important part of my work that I need to take this extra step forward. And after all, it's for a good, good message that all of us needs to know.
Yeah, and it's a complex message. And I remember because I was, you know, very lucky to be taken on a program, not a program, but put it on a trip, really, we put it very modestly, organized by Nottingham, and people working on elephant conservation, taken to the Belum Forest, and understanding the complexities of the animal's contribution to the ecology of that landscape, and, you know, and having that teased out. Of course, when we, as journalists, translated it, it was much more simple, But that background was an extraordinary experience for myself. I mean, I don't think I could look at an elephant again without feeling this tremendous sense of commonality with it as a creature on the planet. I do want to come back to this idea, Shilin, about sustainability, right? Because you're building all this with the idea that Malaysia needs it. It needs it in order to create the right policies to go forward so that we deal with climate change in a sensible way. I know the kind of themes that you take up: pollution, forests, marine ecosystems, communities, biodiversity. It's a huge range. Where do you see the need most, greatest?
That's impossible to answer, right? It's impossible to answer. I think the need is, it's basically everywhere. And that might be a silly way to sort of say it, but I think, it's so intertwined. Like, you know, it is, as you said, a very complex issue. So it's not just about, making sure that there are trees in this area. You have to look at who's managing and making decisions. So first of all, for example, you have to look at who's managing the trees, okay? How are they doing it, right? What's driving them? Then you have to look at where the trees are on, this plot of land. Who does that land belong to, all right? Who makes decisions about that plot of land? Then you've got to look at things like the economics of it as well. So it's very, very multifaceted. And how do you then tell a story that people, to make people care about that? So you've got, as you say, who are your readers, right? Our readers are basically anybody who's interested in environment. They could go from very, very highly technical people who are very interested in solving, coming up with solutions, right? They might be people who are angry with the government because they think it's the government's fault, or they're not doing enough, right? Then we talk to the government as well. And I think that's the idea that journalism can actually talk to all the different people. Unlike, for example, activists. Activists are also talking to all different stakeholders, but activism has its own, sort of direction and sort of thrusts. Whereas as journalists, we want to tell the story, but we want to be fair and balanced. So if you're going to talk about, overfishing in the oceans, right? You want to talk to the fishermen. You want to talk to the communities who are involved. You also want to talk to maybe the pirates, who are coming in. Pirates is not the right word, but the illegal fishers, right? What's driving them, right? You want to talk to them. You want to talk to government. People say, fisheries department, you're not doing enough. What do you have to say to that? What are your constraints? And that way, we're hoping to bring nuance and depth into any sort of discussion related to any issue, rather than to be single-dimensional and to just point fingers, we hope.
Yeah. Well, this is why you're, in fact, a regular on the other show that I do, Consider This with Melissa Idris, because you and the people that work with you are an incredible resource for us to understand environmental issues in the country. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. Wong Sulin and Natasha Zulaika, both with Makaranga. I'll provide some information on Makaranga so you can go to their website and support them if you like. That's all we have for Let's Talk this week. I'm Sharad Kutin, only on Astro Wani.